Siegfried's heroic horn call. In the third part of Wagner's epic tetralogy, The Ring of the Nibelung, we meet the character who inspired it. The genesis of Wagner's hero Siegfried can be traced back to the German Nibelungenlied and medieval Norse sagas. In these sagas, Siegfried is called Sigurd or Siegfried, and his story is very similar to that of his operatic doppelganger. Following the death of his semi-divine parents, Sigurd or Siegfried is raised by a foster father. Driven by boredom and frustration, the young hero seeks adventure, where, in the course of his travels, he obtains mystic knowledge. Hello, I'm Colin Ure. I'm the scriptwriter and host of the Ryan Opera Centre recital series on classical WFMT. Lyrics commentaries are made possible through the generous support of the Patrick G. and Shirley Welsh Ryan Foundation, in memory of their parents. The music excerpts in this podcast are provided by Warner Classics. Once again, a significant period of time has elapsed since the end of Die Walküre and the opening of Siegfried. Sieglinde has given birth to Siegfried in the forest. Before her untimely death, she gives her baby son the broken fragments of his father's sword, Notum. Siegfried is brought up by Mime, the Nibelung dwarf, who has indentured him for the sole purpose of acquiring the ring and the Nibelung treasure. The treasure is being guarded by the giant Fafner, who has used the magic Tarnhelm, which we last saw in Das Rheingold, to transform himself into a ferocious dragon. Wotan, disguised as the Wanderer, travels the earth, while Brunhilde remains asleep on her rock, protected by Loge's magic fire. By following Mime's insidious advice, Siegfried forges Notum and kills Fafner the dragon. Alerted to Mime's treachery by a forest bird, Siegfried kills Mime. Then, following an angry encounter with Wotan, disguised as the Wanderer, Siegfried shatters the Wanderer's spear. Siegfried penetrates the flames surrounding Brunhilde's rock and claims her as his bride. Siegfried is the first of the Ring operas whose action takes place entirely in the world of nature and humans. Wagner intended that Siegfried should create a contrast to Die Walküre and Götterdämmerung. By being light-hearted, engaging and warm in character, Wagner hoped that it would become the most popular work in the Ring. But Siegfried has a dark side, and this is evident from the music of its prelude, where bassoons and brass portray the menacing character of Mime, while the tuba depicts Fafner the dragon guarding the treasure in his forest lair at Nidhöhle. There is an element of visual darkness in Siegfried too. Most of the action takes place in dark, mysterious locations. The interior of Mime's dwelling, the gloomy forest, and the cavern at the foot of Brunhilde's rock. Only in the final scene, which takes place on the rock's summit, does sunshine finally appear. Darkness can also be heard in the timbre of the male voices, which dominate the opera. It's only when the forest bird sings towards the end of Act Two that we hear a female voice for the first time. Siegfried, Wagner's man of the future, is a problem character. He's not the noble hero of romantic literature. Siegfried is ignorant, petulant, boorish, cruel, and childish. The opera critic Ernest Newman referred to him as an overgrown boy scout, while the German philosopher Theodor Adorno called him a bully boy incorrigible in his naivety. It was Wagner's decision to make Siegfried the progeny of incest, prompting the German philosopher Nietzsche's comment that Siegfried's genesis is a declaration of war against morality. But our petulant Boy Scout hero is not all bad. Wagner imbues him with some redeeming qualities. Siegfried has a longing and capacity for love. Lonely and isolated, he searches the forest for companionship, and it's there that he meets the forest bird, who warns him of Mime's treachery and tells him about Brunhilde asleep on the rock. Ignorant of the ring's significance and power, Siegfried, unlike many of the other characters, cares nothing for power or riches. Having killed Fafnir and following the forest bird's advice, all that Siegfried takes from Fafnir's lair is the ring and the magic Tarnhelm. So is Siegfried little more than a cipher? Unlike other characters in the ring, he lacks knowledge. His actions are entirely dependent on them, some of whom use him to further their own ends. Slowly, Siegfried assembles the puzzle of his life. He shows no interest in the Wanderer or the knowledge he wishes to impart. No wonder that the Wanderer is horrified to see that the future he has hoped and planned for is dependent on his ignorant gauche grandson. One of Siegfried's attributes is his fearlessness. His lack of fear is not only fundamental to his character, but also an important theme of the work. Had Siegfried experienced fear, he would have been unable to forge Notung, kill Fafnir, and penetrate the flames surrounding Brunhilde's rock. And if, momentarily, having removed Brunhilde's armour and seeing a woman for the first time, he confuses fear with sexual arousal, our naive hero quickly overcomes it. Siegfried is perplexing. His ignorance and naivety, endearing qualities in some, are overshadowed by his lack of interest, concern, and cruelty towards others. Unlike Wagner's Parsifal, the pure fool who attains enlightenment, Siegfried only does so moments before his death. Wotan realized in Die Walküre that only an independent being who was free from his influence had the power to win the ring and free it from its curse. Siegmund was too much under Wotan's control to qualify, so Wotan intends that Siegfried will be the savior of the gods. But Siegfried proves to have too free a spirit, and in Act 3, when he shatters the Wanderer's spear in his passionate quest for love, he destroys both Wotan's power and the world order that allows love to survive. The tragic relationship between Siegmund and Sieglinde in Die Walküre and the doomed relationship between Siegfried and Brünnhilde in Götterdämmerung reveals that love does not provide a viable alternative to law and structure. In Siegfried, Wagner comes closest to realizing his dream of creating his German ring cycle in the style of ancient Greek drama. Inspired by Aeschylus, Siegfried's dramaturgy mirrors the Aeschylean structure, in which the story evolves through a series of scenes between pairs of characters. Characters fated to suffer because of the sins of their fathers is a fundamental theme in Greek tragedy. Siegfried is sacrificed not for the sins of his father Siegmund, but for the sins of his grandfather Wotan, and dies in ignorance of them. Wagner's use of leitmotifs, short, recurring musical themes associated with characters, objects, ideas, and emotions, provide a fascinating emotional foundation and guide throughout the ring. For Siegfried, Wagner created 23 new leitmotifs, 11 in Act 3 alone. Mime and Siegfried's personalities could not be more different. Their relationship is defined by lies. Each tells the other the opposite of what he thinks and means. Siegfried's music is carefree and boisterous. Here he is in full flight, looking forward to the day when he can leave Mime forever. This animated leitmotif illustrates Siegfried and his quest for independence. Mime's music is sycophantic and whining. In this excerpt, Mime sings about the trouble and care he took raising Siegfried from childhood. Every word he sings is sugar-coated with deception.
Als hungrendes Kind zog ich dich auf, wärmte mit Kleiden den kleinen Wurm, Speise und Trank, trug ich dir zu, hütete dich wie die eigene Haut. Und wie du erwuchst, wartend ich dein Lager schuf ich, das Leich du schließt. Geschmiedet ich tat und ein tönend Horn.
The mood changes for the scene between Mime and the Wanderer, who engage in a game of riddles. Votan, the active lawmaker, is disguised as the Wanderer, who is a passive observer. The Wanderer's leitmotif, a descending phrase played by the brass, is majestic and mysterious. It's quite unlike any music associated with him that we've heard in The Ring up until now. In this excerpt, it's played by the orchestra as the Wanderer greets Mime at the beginning of their scene in Act One. The role of Siegfried is written for a Helden or heroic tenor voice and is one of the most taxing and vocally demanding in the repertory. Siegfried's first vocal challenge is the forging scene, which closes Act One. Frustrated by Mime's unproductive efforts at forging a sword, Siegfried takes control and forges the shattered fragments of his father's sword, Notum. The sound world of Act Two consists of shifting musical moods, characterizing each of the pairs of encounters. Leitmotifs portraying Alberic's revenge, his quest to reclaim the ring, and his ambition to become master of the world dominates his scene with the Wanderer. The music for Siegfried and Fafnir's confrontation depicts not only Fafnir's ignorance and sadness, but also Siegfried's bravado and heartlessness. Having been mortally wounded by Siegfried, the dragon transforms back into the giant Fafnir, his final monologue conveying a newfound sense of nobility. And Wagner's intention that the opera should be light-hearted can be seen in the darkly comic scene where the Nibelung brothers, Mime and Alberich, squabble over the treasure. At the heart of Act Two is the only scene in the opera where we see Siegfried alone and in contemplative mood. His soliloquy is a parallel to his grandfather Wotan's monologue in Die Walküre, both characters acquiring self-awareness through memory and introspection. In this scene referred to as The Forest Murmurs, imaginative use of woodwind and strings conjures up the solitude of the forest, its dense foliage swaying in the breeze, penetrated by shafts of sunlight. And with the enchanting sound of birdsong, this evocative music illustrates the world of nature, a fundamental theme in The Ring. In 19th century literature and poetry, the forest is a metaphor for a wild, lawless natural space, devoid of human and social conventions. In the opera, Mime describes the forest to Siegfried as a dangerous place, hoping to instill fear into him. Fafnir the dragon uses the forest as a remote sanctuary, far away from prying eyes and thieving hands. Even Wotan shuns the forest, which is why Brunhilde tells Sieglinde to hide from him there. Siegfried, who is a child of nature, is unfettered by social convention. He regards the forest as his home domain, where he can relate to the forest animals. And it is only the forest bird that Siegfried listens to and takes advice from in the opera. Siegfried's character also symbolizes the restored harmony between mankind and nature, which was destroyed when Wotan tore a branch from the world ash tree to make his spear, and when Alberich stole the Rheingold. In 1857, disillusioned by the enormity of his task and the possibility that the ring would never reach fruition and be performed, Wagner stopped work on Siegfried after Act II. In a letter to Franz Liszt, his future father-in-law, Wagner delivered his moving epitaph to Siegfried, an epitaph whose poetic beauty is worthy of the great German poets Goethe, Heine or Schiller. "I have led my young Siegfried into the beautiful solitude of the forest," Wagner writes. "There I have left him under the linden tree and have taken leave of him with heartfelt tears." Over the next 12 years, Wagner composed two of his greatest music dramas, Tristan und Isolde and Die Meistersinge von Nürnberg, as well as revising his earlier opera, Tannhäuser. Refreshed and inspired, Wagner returned to Siegfried in 1869, completing it 2 years later. During this 12-year gap, Wagner's orchestral and vocal writing developed and matured, which can be heard not only in the music for Act III of Siegfried, but also in Gitterdämmerung. In the prelude to Act III of Siegfried, the music is associated with Wotan and Erda, the omniscient earth goddess, who's also Brunhilde's mother. Erda's slow-moving leitmotif that we first heard in Das Rheingold has acquired a sense of urgency as events are moving towards a momentous conclusion. Wotan and Erda bicker like an old married couple. Wotan asks her questions that she is unable to answer, making it clear that her power is waning. Wagner builds the musical tension through Siegfried and the Wanderer's angry encounter in the next scene, the music reaching its climax as Siegfried shatters the Wanderer's spear before heading off for Brunhilde's rock. So why is Wotan disguised as the Wanderer? He tells Mime that he has come to observe, not to act. But is he telling the truth? Is he up to his old tricks, meddling in the lives of others, just like his Greek counterpart, Zeus? Does he still believe that he can regain the ring and save the gods? By telling Mime that Notum can only be forged by someone who has never experienced fear, he manipulates the situation, ensuring that Siegfried forges the sword, kills Fafner and acquires the ring. And why does he allow Siegfried to shatter his spear? When confronted by his ignorant and arrogant grandson, does Wotan simply lose his temper? We've seen him lose his godly cool before. In Die Walküre, he killed Hunding and later punished Brunhilde. So by letting Siegfried shatter his spear, is Wotan, the arch-meddler, helping Siegfried to accomplish his mission of awakening Brunhilde and saving the gods? In the orchestral passage to the final scene, the music conveys Siegfried's excitement as he climbs the rock and penetrates the flames. Using an exhilarating combination of leitmotifs, Wagner finally releases the pent-up tension he's created as Loge's fire music is punctuated by Siegfried's heroic horn call. Brunhilde, like Siegfried, has a great capacity for love. As a Valkyrie, she loved and honoured Wotan. Her feelings of familial love developed into compassionate love as she witnessed Siegmund's love for Sieglinde. In the final scene, Siegfried wakens her. Their duet begins tentatively as they struggle to comprehend their emotions. Brunhilde is troubled by harrowing memories from her past, while Siegfried reminisces about his mother. Unable to comprehend what Brunhilde is telling him, Siegfried experiences fear, while Brunhilde, realizing that she is now mortal and alarmed by Siegfried's growing passion, is overcome with shame and terror. In a glorious melody illustrating her loyalty and devotion, Brunhilde tells Siegfried that she has always loved him. Realizing that she is experiencing another form of love, erotic love, Brunhilde finally surrenders to Siegfried's ardent protestations. The opera ends in a majestic glow of engaging, light-hearted warmth, just as Wagner intended 25 years earlier. Lyric's production of Siegfried, conceived by David Poutney, is seen through the eyes of an innocent child, Siegfried himself. The set designs by Johann Engels, realized by Robert Innes Hopkins, create a larger-than-life world for the characters to inhabit. Influenced by the style of children's drawings, the first act takes place in an oversized nursery, while the world of nature in Act II is seen as if imagined by a young child. And as Siegfried moves towards maturity in Act III, the production returns to the adult visual worlds of Das Rheingold and Die Walküre. In the final scene of the opera, Poutney successfully overcomes one of its major challenges, Brunhilde and Siegfried's 45-minute duet. Poutney directs the characters so that their uncertainty and insecurity can be seen in the evolution of the scene. The brightly lit childhood spaces that Engels has created for them allow Siegfried and Brunhilde safe havens to retreat to, where they can explore and express their fluctuating emotions. From the vividly characterized domestic world of Act I, with the thrilling heroics of the forging song, through the gloriously rich natural world of Act II, culminating in the orchestral and vocal Everest of Act III, Wagner has created distinct musical worlds for each of Siegfried's acts. Wagner would have gained musical immortality had he composed nothing other than Act III of Siegfried, with its orchestral magnificence, its richly drawn characters, and its burning passion. So let's leave Siegfried and Brunhilde about to consummate their passion, or as Anna Russell humorously referred to it, their love on the rocks. For Siegfried and Brunhilde, all is love and laughter, at least for now.